more of Andy Parks, live from the Washington Times.
And good afternoon. Welcome back. 1206 at 1260 WRC. It is indeed Andy Parks, live from the Washington Times. And we start this hour number two with Washington Times reporter Rowan Scarborough. Rowan, how are you?
Hey, Andy. Doing great.
The headline reads, State Department security chose flight over fight in Benghazi. This according to the Senate Intel Committee report yesterday?
That's right. They have presented a chronology of the attack on the consulate and then the attack on the annex. That's a little bit different than the State Department's official chronology on those two attacks. And to me, the new disclosure is, you know, we had five diplomatic security officers assigned to that consulate to protect the diplomats, including Ambassador Christopher Stevens. They are equipped with high-powered assault rifles, M4 carbines that can be used, you know, like machine guns if they need to be. And yet, during the entire attack, not one shot was fired by these security officers. And this is a sentence that's included in the Senate Intelligence Committee report. So they thought enough of it to investigate just exactly what those, as they're called, DS, diplomatic security agents, did, and to make note of the fact that they never fired a shot. So I think it's another interesting fact in the chronology of, you know, why that consulate went down, why the ambassador died, who could never get out of there. And, you know, could have things have gone differently? Could the agents have responded immediately with gunfire, perhaps holding back the crowd and maybe getting the ambassador out of there? That's sort of the inference you draw from the way the report was written.
All right, but is there a legitimate argument for not firing back?
Well, the State Department provided me with the argument. They say that those DS agents are trained not to fire if they think it would make matters worse.
Okay.
And in this case, they decided that firing on this crowd that was setting fire to the building where the ambassador was holed up would have made things worse. So that's, you know, that's the dilemma that they face. Don't fire and there's no chance of saving him, I guess, and you do fire and maybe there's no chance of saving him worse. So instead of firing, they retreated into a compound of their own and holed up there, and then were able to get in an armored vehicle at some point and come through the compound. But at no time during all of this, when they were holed up, when one of them was on the roof of the compound that was burning, when they got into the armored vehicles, did they ever fire a shot at the invaders. And some people would say, well, why are they there? Why are they given these high-powered rifles?
Yeah.
And the State Department gives the yang to that. You know, this is why they didn't. Now, it should be noted that within 30 minutes, a rescue team arrived from the annex. And these guys were, you know, there were four former military guys. One of them, an ex-SEAL, who ultimately was killed back at the annex. And they arrived at the annex, and they did not have any heavy weapons, but they were able to push back by firing on this crowd. They were able to push back and basically, you know, get control of an area of the compound to look for the ambassador. So they were able to do it. And how do you anticipate how a mob is going to act when they're shot, when they're being shot at? Although it doesn't say it in the report, Andy, I assume that they inflicted carnage on this mob when they arrived.
Yeah.
I mean, these SEAL guys, they're good at doing that, and they were able to make them flee, to make the attackers flee by this volley of gunfire. But they were not able to find the ambassador. They were able to find the other deceased, Sean Smith, and then they basically shot their way. They got the diplomatic security officers into their two vehicles, and then they were able to shoot their way back to the annex, where, unfortunately, they then found themselves under attack for, you know, roughly the next 7 hours until a rescue team was able to come from Tripoli into the Benghazi airport and get in vehicles and come to the annex.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about the Libyan authorities? We got no help from them?
Well, that's the other thing, you know, that is so kind of pathetic about this. You know, we had elements of the February 17th militia, which was supposed to be there just for this kind of incident. Then there were some police officers, Libyan police officers. They fled. They did nothing for us. The 17th February militia did nothing, as far as I can tell in this report, to protect the compound. And when the rescue team arrived from the annex, they would not even help them with suppression fire to beat back the crowd. So they were not a lot of help there either. So the police, Libyan police ran, and the 17th February Brigade did very little. And then there were some unarmed Libyans assigned to this British defense firm, Blue Mountain Security, and they did nothing either, as far as I can tell. So all the arrangements made with the Libyans to help us protect that compound were for naught, woefully ineffective. And it basically came down to these five DS agents and their M4 assault rifles to protect the diplomats.
Yeah. I'm going to throw a wrench at you here, only because Congressman Frank Wolf has asked the question about the Benghazi report never telling us why the CIA annex was there, and perhaps the potential for having, you know, maybe even a large number of people help out in this attack.
That's right. That is a classified issue that the Intel Committee could not put in the public report, because the CIA wants their exact mission in Benghazi to remain classified for whatever reason. And, of course, there is some argument as to why was it, if the place was so dangerous, I mean, not only why did we have a consulate operating there, but why did we have a CIA annex filled with scores of people that the Islamists obviously knew about, since it had been sitting there for months? And, I mean, we know one of the things the CIA was doing there was trying to collect shoulder-fired weapons, because that if you want to make a list of the things we don't want al-Qaeda to get a hold of, one of them is shoulder-fired weapons. And the Libyans and the CIA that were able to collect the missiles themselves, and the buttstocks, as they call them, that are used to launch them. Some of them have migrated out of Libya, because we know that because one shipment was intercepted in Turkey that was bound for Islamists in Syria. So, the Benghazi is a port, and it became sort of it did become an arms bazaar after Gaddafi fell, and all sorts of weapons were flowing through there, going to all sorts of different places, including Syria. So counterproliferation was one of the CIA's missions, and they were also trying to set up relations with the various militias that were supposed to be on our side, like the 17th February militia. That was another job that they were doing. You know, there's all sorts of rumors that they were involved and directly involved in getting weapons and then sending them to pro-Western rebels that operated out of Turkey into Syria. I don't think that is true. I don't think there was any finding or any authorization for that ever approved by the White House, and I don't think they were doing that. But maybe they were, and maybe I'm wrong. But I think counterproliferation was in reaching out and trying to find information out about this, you know, these al-Qaeda affiliated groups that were rising up in Benghazi. That would be another thing that the officers would have been doing there.
Mm-hmm. All right, so overall, the Senate Intel report is very damning for the administration, and especially coming to the conclusion that this event was preventable, right?
That's right, because there were so many warnings from the CIA about what was going on in Benghazi, and the ambassador himself sent cables about how much more dangerous Benghazi was becoming week after week. And we knew, this isn't classified, we knew that al-Qaeda affiliates, one by one, were attacking Western sites in Benghazi. And we had to be on the target list. So it was just a matter of time before they got to that consulate. So it could have been prevented by one of two ways, just not operating that consulate there, because the place, like other Western countries decided to do, because it was just becoming too dangerous, or really fortifying that place with scores of security people and let the Islamists in town know that we are well fortified to protect this compound. Those were the two options. And we know that Tripoli requested more diplomatic security for that compound, and we know that they were denied by the State Department. And so that is another opportunity where, you know, perhaps this tragedy could have been prevented. So it was. This is a bipartisan report. This isn't, you know, the Republican staff of the House Oversight Committee. This is Democrats and Republicans unanimously saying that the State Department could have prevented this tragedy from happening if it had acted on the information that it was receiving.
Folks, if you haven't read the story, please check it out. It's in today's Washington Times. State Department security chose flight over fight in Benghazi. It's by Rowan Scarborough. Rowan, always good to talk to you. Thank you.
Okay, Andy. Thanks. Take care.
1216, 1260 WRC, Andy Parks, live from the Washington Times. This portion of my show is brought to you by K-Hubnanian Homes. New communities, new designs. Go to khub.com for more information.